By the way, my brother, Dennis, they call him Bear, lives in Lahaina, and we go see him once a year. And I always go to the bookstore in Lahaina because she has the most wonderful books in there. And I get all my, I don't take any books. I just go into her store. And I know that you and she have a great relationship. And I saw one of your CDs in there once, and she was playing it.
Yeah, it's a great little bookstore, and Lahaina's a pretty fun place to visit.
Do you live there part-time, or just go to visit?
No, I don't live there. I used to go camping there every summer, right on the water. It was only $3 a day.
Get off.
No, it was a place called Camp Pakusa. It's still there, but it's changed hands, I believe, and costs more. But it was great just to listen to the surf all through the night.
Oh, man.
Laying in your tent.
He is Charlie Musselwhite, and he is coming to Alberta with Ruthie Foster, who we just talked to a couple of minutes ago. And I think it's fair to say, Charlie, you and I have a couple of mutual friends, but the strongest one would be Dan Aykroyd, who I've known a long time now. And I wonder where you...
He's a good guy.
He's a good guy. And I love the fact that... that he gratefully acknowledges that he modeled Jake after you. Did he say he was going to do that, or did he tell you later on?
Only later on. I didn't know him at the time. I mean, I was playing, and he was in college. He was a student, and he would come to see me. But I didn't know him at that point. And I would, back then, I kind of dressed like that with a black suit and shades, and my hair slicked back. And I didn't have handcuffs on my for my harp case, though.
Okay. Well, it's every time I see the Blues Brothers, I'm thinking of you, of course. First of all, congratulations on the winning of the Grammy with Ben Harper for Get Up. It was just a wonderful moment, and I wonder now, reflecting on it, because you've been nominated. Seven times, I think. What was it about that album and that collaboration that the Grammy voters finally recognized?
Well, that's a real good question, and I don't know. If I knew the answer,
I'd do it again.
Yeah. But, you know, the thing about the Grammys is you're voted on by your peers or other people in the business. It's not based on how many you sold or how popular you are or anything like that. It's just what they think of you. And it's a real honor that they all thought enough to be nominated alone is quite a honorable thing. And but after 11 times, yeah, I guess it was my turn.
It was your turn. And again, you'd known Ben quite a while. I guess you'd met on a John Lee Hooker session. Was it Best of Friends?
Well, we had met way before that. At the first time we met, Ben opened for John Lee, and that was John Lee would often. I wasn't in John Lee's band, but he would often ask me to come play with him, and if I wasn't doing anything else, and I was there, and that's where we first met, and our paths just kept crossing, and we just seemed to have a rapport musically and as friends. And when we went to do that session backing up John Lee, that's when we really locked in, because that was the first time we actually played together. And that really got our attention. Even John Lee said that we said, well, you guys ought to do more. And we kept talking about it. And along the way, over the years, I did a few tunes here and there on Ben's recordings, and he did a couple on mine, and we just never had enough time to do a whole album. But finally that day came when we both were off at the same time, and we went in the studio, and it was like magic. It's like all those tunes, all that music was like had been, you know, locked up and waiting to get out.
It was set free.
It just poured out.
And how much touring did you do with it?
Oh, we were on the, since it came out, before it came out, we were doing gigs. Then we toured Europe and Australia, all over the place. It's been solid touring. And now we're talking about doing another album, so there'll be more touring coming up.
Oh, very nice. Do you think, is a question, I think this is a valid question. It's a larger than the, both the two of us question, and that is, do you think, I know that jazz is having a real hard time getting a foothold on radio and in today's audience. How about the blues? Is the blues moving back into mainstream, do you think?
Well, I don't know, but I think it's, well, the way I look at blues is it's not like a lot of other kinds of music. It's not a fad, and it's more to it than just music. It's really kind of a, like a philosophy or an attitude. And but for me, the way I look at it, blues is bigger now than it's ever been. I mean, when I was starting out, blues was really, I think of it, blues as being the one percenters of the music world.
Exactly.
You know? Low man on the totem pole. But, I mean, back then, there was no blues societies, there were no blues cruises, there were no blues magazines or books. And today, there's just tons of information, and there's blues radio shows, and just all kind of DVDs on how to play the blues. And so it's really a whole bigger world than it was when I started out. So, and I think I hear more blues on the radio than I used to, but, and also the term blues is a lot broader than it used to be. A lot of stuff they call blues today wouldn't have been thought of as blues in the 50s or maybe even the 60s.
Well, for example, Black Keys, are they, you consider them leaning into that blues field?
I can, well, it's like with Ben too, I can detect roots feeling at the base of it all.
Sure.
You know, like it's coming from this solid, bluesy, rooty place. And that's saying something, I think.
That's good, because they can carry that flag for quite a while. Those guys know what they're doing.
And a lot of radio stations, just two in my area alone, that have switched from whatever they were doing before to become what they call roots stations. So I think there's a, at least around here, there's a kind of a movement. Maybe it's spreading.
Charlie Musselwhite is on the phone with me. I'm thrilled to have him here. This is Terry David Mulligan, Mulligan's 2CKUA. You can check him out at charliemusselwhite.com. And the muscle is M-U-S-S-E-L. And the Charlie's Charlie. Can you, I'm dying to just ask this question and step aside and let you color the picture for me. Describe for me, if you would, what it was like. You were very young, the first time that you stepped into the streets of Memphis. And then, if you can, describe what it was like the first time that you, your first impressions of Chicago when you got there, the difference between the two, and who was playing.
Well, when I got to Memphis, that was a long time ago. I don't really remember. It was certainly a different city than it is now. It was more of a just a big old country town, because a lot of people there were from Mississippi and Arkansas and West Tennessee. And I mean, I heard blues downtown, and they were like street singers. I was fascinated by the street singers in Memphis. And later on, when I got older, I got to know a lot of those guys. And I didn't know at the time I was preparing myself for a career. I would have paid way more attention, but I just loved the music, and I got to know people like Furry Lewis and Will Shade and Gus Cannon and Willie Borum and a lot of guys, and I was learning from them. And then later I went to Chicago, still not thinking anything about being a musician as a profession. I just liked the music. And I got to Chicago. I didn't have a clue about Chicago, about the blues scene. All I knew was it was a big city way up north that had a lot of work that paid really well and had benefits. And that's the only reason I went to Chicago, because the South was real economically depressed. And like thousands of other people, I was migrating north to get a good job. Well, the first job I got was a driver for an exterminator. And I drove that guy all over Chicago, which was perfect because I learned the whole city right away, and I would see these signs. They would say, like, Muddy Waters is here tonight, Elmore James, Howlin' Wolf. I mean, they were all there, Little Walter, Sonny Boy Williamson. And I just couldn't believe it. You know, I had all these guys' records, and they were like my, I just couldn't wait to get into these clubs and go see them in person. I'd write down the addresses, at night I'd go hang out, and still not thinking about playing with them. I was just happy to be hanging out and listening. I mean, how great it was to listen to Muddy Waters live till 4 a.m. And I wasn't asking to sit in or holding up my harmonica, and I didn't even tell anybody I played anything. And so it was just really wonderful to be in that. I already knew how to drink coming from Memphis. And this was strictly adults. There was no kids my age in these clubs, and no white people at all, or on an extremely rare occasion. So they were real flattered that I would knew who they were and that I had their records and knew the names of their tunes. I'd make requests, and I'd ask Muddy to play Rolling and Tumbling. How do you know that tune, boy? And I got the 78.
And did anybody, what happened when you told them that you played harp?
Well, I never did.
Okay. Right.
What happened was this waitress I'd gotten to know real well, which is another story. She told Muddy, you ought to hear Charlie play harmonica, because I'd played some for her once. And when Muddy heard that I played, well, he insisted I sit in, which wasn't unusual because at Pepper's Lounge, which was Muddy's home club where he played when he wasn't on the road, a lot of musicians hung out there. And since it was open till 4 a.m. and five in the morning from on Saturday night, which was Sunday morning, that's a lot of time to kill. So Muddy was always, you know, eager to have people sit in, and a lot of guys did. That's where I met a whole lot of other musicians, man, like Robert Nighthawk. But what was unusual is a young white kid sitting in. And I guess they liked the way I played, because Muddy, anytime, for the rest of his life, anytime Muddy saw me, he'd always invite me to sit in. And other musicians saw me sitting in and started offering me gigs. And that's when everything changed. You're going to pay me? Okay.
I'm gonna have to give up my driving job. But okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, this was my ticket out of the day gig.
I can remember when we first started playing rock and roll and blues on FM radio, and one of the first albums I got my hands on was from Vanguard. It was your Stand Back album, and it was powerful, powerful stuff. But you ended up in San Francisco, where I had gone. I had gone to San Francisco and sat in with Big Daddy Tom Donahue. I want to do this. He's doing it here in San Francisco. Why can't I do it in Vancouver? So I came back and ordered all the albums. Is that what drew you to San Francisco? Because you knew that you could get airplay there and extend your career?
Well, I didn't know it at the time, but they were playing me on the radio, the underground radio, where, I mean, these guys brought records from home and played wherever they wanted to play. They weren't given like a playlist and said, this is what you'll play. So they weren't playing me on the radio in Chicago, and I kept getting these calls to Chicago saying, asking me to come out and play. And I kept putting them off, and finally some guy came up with a whole month of work for really good money. And I thought, well, I'll just go out there and, you know, make that money and come on back. And I didn't really have any desire to go to California. I was having a heck of a good time right there in Chicago. But I got out to Chicago, California, and man, it was really something. It was like blues was exotic or something.
Yeah.
And all up and down the West Coast, I discovered there was all this work. There were these big clubs, not the little tiny, rough little places I was playing, but like the Fillmore and the Avalon, and more of these ballroom kind of situations up and down the West Coast. And the hippies were way open to any kind of music. They liked everything. I mean, like, wherever Bill Graham would book at the Fillmore, everybody wanted to go see it, even if they had no clue what it was. They trusted his taste. And the radio guys were playing whatever they felt like playing.
It was a great time.
Yeah, it was really happening. And
you know, Bill loved to do triple bills. He loved to have three acts on a single night. But there was no guarantee that one act would ever complement the other. What's the strangest three-act stage, Bill Graham stage, that you can remember playing, who you were playing up against?
Well, I can't remember exactly, but, you know, it wouldn't be unusual to see like Ravi Shankar and Albert King and
Mother,
the Grateful Dead
and the mother of, the mothers of invention, or Frank Zappa.
Yeah, it could be three completely different things, but it worked. I mean, and they were all enjoyable, and everybody had a great time. Everything worked if you have an open attitude.
Charlie Musselwhite is on the phone, and his official website is charliemusselwhite.com. By the way, they have great merchandise there, I'll tell you that.
Yahoo.
Where are you with, when you come, you're coming to, let me get my dates in front of me. Hold on a second. If I took the time to write them, I might as well use them. Hold on just a second. You're coming to Edmonton March the 17th. You know, it's St. Patrick's Day, Charlie.
Oh, boy.
You got to maybe do Tour Allure Allure. Anyway, March the 17th at the Northern Alberta Jubilee Auditorium, and then the Jack Singer in Calgary, March the 19th, with the one and only Ruthie Foster.
Yeah.
Are you still doing tunes from the Get Up album?
Well, I do those with when I'm touring with Ben.
Right.
A lot of the tunes that I did with Ben, they're not on the album I'm doing, and mostly I'm just doing my own, you know, when I'm with my band, we're doing tunes that I've done from the past, and some I've never recorded, and some that are current, and we have a good time. We enjoy what we're doing. We have so much fun on stage, the audience can't help but have fun.
What is it? So you've been playing stuff from like Jute Joint Chapel and The Well, of course.
And even from Stand Back.
Nice. Really? Wow. When you play, can you, I asked this of, who did I ask this of? So it was a guitar player. Hold on just a second. I said, Carlos Santana. I asked Carlos, where do you, because I noticed him on stage. He goes somewhere. He's not on that stage when he's playing. He gets away somewhere. How about you? Are you quite conscious of the room, or do you? Where do you go when you play? It's a very personal statement.
Well, there's a thing that happens with music that, or at least from guys like me and Carlos, where the music you're playing, and then you're waiting for the spirit to hit you. It seems like the spirit of the music will show up and just take you where it wants to go. And you feel like you become the instrument also, like you're being played. And I feel like when you're in that zone, I feel like I'm just an observer. And I'm listening to the music thinking, wow, where is this coming from? I hope I remember all this. And you're just standing there and like a bystander almost. And it's going right through you. That's when you hit that spot, that's when the magic really happens.
Well, that's what we'll
always reach for. That
that's what I'm looking for. How cool is it, Charlie, that you now have a brass note from the Walk of Fame on Beale Street, right outside of BB's Club? How cool is that?
Well, I really like that a lot. That's I remember going up and down those streets when I was just a kid, and so it's fitting and apt, and it's really great to me personally that it's on the same streets that I grew up on.
Do you know what your festival summer circuit looks like now?
Well, it's still being filled in, but I've got work booked up even the next year.
And are
I'll
you
be going overseas and all around the U.S.
And any Canadian dates that you've seen?
Well, I'll be in Montreal.
Oh, yeah.
I can't read my writing here.
It's
I'll be in Montreal June 28th and Winnipeg July 10th. That's with Ben Harper.
Right. And then do you keep...
Saskatchewan Jazz Festival.
Right.
June 21st.
Keep coming. Keep coming. You can get here. Anything in Alberta?
Yeah. Well, I'll be doing what we call the Blues Hall of Fame tour with James Cotton and John Hammond. But that's next year, 25th April. I'll be in... Kitchener, Burlington, Kingston, and Brampton, Ontario, and St. Catharines. I don't see...
All right. It's a big country, Charlie.
I know. It's a big world.
Big world. I want to thank you for your music. And I've been playing it ever since those first days when I got back from San Francisco, and I said, we got to play this stuff. And I've been playing
it. Well, I admire your taste.
Well, it was a slam dunk. There's no way I wouldn't be doing it. And I keep that flame alive. And I want to, even though I'm surrounded by blues shows, and I got Holger Peterson in front of me, who's been doing that show for 45 years. He's a great guy. And I'm absolutely thrilled to have you on Mulligan Stew. And we're looking forward to seeing you St. Patrick's Day.
I'm thrilled, too. Bring your dancing shoes. Come early and stay late. We're going to have a great time.
Hold on a second. I'll wrap this up, and then I'll give you a quick note here. He's Charlie Musselwhite. You just got to check him out. The 17th in Edmonton, the 19th in Calgary. This is Charlie blowing the way he does best on Mulligan Stew, CKUA. Well, so you live in Sonoma. How are you in wine doing? Do you have a cellar? Do you collect?
Well, I'm the only musician in history that moved to the wine country and quit drinking. But I have a lot of wine that people give me, and I just keep it here for people that visit, or my wife cooks with it.
Right.
So we're not really drinkers or collectors, but we're right in the middle of it.
But you gotta love Sonoma.
Oh yeah, right. Just a few minutes from my house is Coppola's winery and restaurant. I see him in there eating quite often.
Nice. Thank you for this, Charlie. I appreciate your time.
It's my pleasure, and hope to see you down the line.
Thank you. I'll see you in Vancouver. Thanks, Charlie.
Okay, man. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.